Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio on the BBS Network. We're simulcasting along with our YouTube channel at eSETI Stargate, and be sure and click on that and become a friend. And there's so many other things going on right now. The we're in winter now. The snow's flying up here, so we're kind of a little bit locked in and not doing too much as far as working with other people. But it's a great time to go within and kind of clean house, so to speak. And I'm getting calls like crazy and emails from people, and I guess they're having crazy dreams. They're feeling other influences around them, energies. That's all part of the process. You know, we've been hit by huge magnetic waves that are coming through the planet right now. The Schumann resonance is off the scale. So everything is lifting, everything is rising, and the veils between worlds are coming down. So it's a really good idea to learn how to do clearing work and clear your space. That's all on the website. And also, too, to just monitor yourself. And we have a saying, if you don't like what you're feeling, do a healing. But anyway, with our guests tonight, we've got a great guest. We've got Aurora, and she's a galactic walk-in who came into this physical body when the previous occupant died on October 8th, 2001. Aurora is an abstract otherworldly presence, and she is connected to a non-technological consciousness collective that is also abstract and otherworldly, and which runs on pure love. She entered into this body via a genetic portal she created and named the Flying Rainbow Lasagna. so that's which higher dimensional torus shape, and it's a new way of dancing with DNA strands. Aurora works as a professional artist, runs her own clothing business based on her Flying Rainbow Lasagna artwork, as well as teaching an online class called Lessons for Full Spectrum Humans about higher dimensional math concepts, in which she depicts in her paintings. And she also practices the Flying Rainbow Lasagna dance each day, transforming the fabric of space-time consciousness with new possibilities and combinations of events which radiate outward, superseding existing genetic patterns. So if you want to learn more about this, you can go to her website, and it's www.flyingrainbowlasagna.com. So without any further ado, Aurora, are you with us?
I'm right here. Thank you so much, James. Thank you for inviting me on your show. It's wonderful to be talking with you today.
All right. Yeah, great to have you on the show. Now, you're talking about your walk-in, and I guess it was 2001 when that happened. How is it? First question is, how are you enjoying Earth?
That's a very big question, and I often joke with people about my shock and horror at the barbarian value system that I perceive down here. And so, the value system that I come from, and I come from a collective, not from like a location in the night sky. You know, like if you say, where do you come from? Like point to a star. It's not like that. I come from a group, which is kind of like saying you come from a symphony or you come from a band. And part of the values of, you know, like how do I identify what my group is like? It's all about the values of unconditional love. That's literally like the gas that makes the car go, you know, makes the vehicle move. And also everything is built upon foundation of freedom, that the idea that freedom is a force like gravity, and that consciousness has to be free to move and, you know, change and grow and, you know, respond and behave like without being encumbered. So those, you know, value systems are where I'm used to coming from. And then to come here into this present socioeconomic matrix, it was definitely like crash landing and a very rude awakening, because around here, like, genuine goodness is not just innately rewarded. Like there's, you know, like the barbarian value system, it says only the strong shall survive and to the victor go the spoils. And so it's like we're in a band that only the worst musicians are amplified, and they just sing really, really loud, and they don't necessarily know how to read music or how to listen to other musicians. So it's a huge challenge. The short answer, huge challenge.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of, you know, after I had my own near-death experience, there's a lot of times after I returned and decided to come back, you know, I always ask myself, what was I thinking? You know, was I, You know, so, but anyway, I am glad I came back, and I, you know, worked with a lot of people, helped a lot of people. So that was my intention, but,
right.
but at the same time, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's, I mean, even as a kid, people would say one thing, they would think something else, and they'd feel something totally different. And you get all three inputs at the same time, and it's really confusing.
Definitely. The two-facedness, I had to learn about duplicity. Like, I didn't understand that a person's words could be different than their heart or their intention. So I had to learn about not being literal. Most of my mistakes in my first years of being here were of being too literal in my interpretation of human language. So that, like, that was very big. And yes, I mean, I'm completely agreeing with you. It's not a vacation. Being here is not like we're on a sightseeing tour. It's like you have a specific mission or something that you have to accomplish, because it can be very uncomfortable, or we can be, let's say, under great duress. Like, it's really hard to be here. Huh. And I'm in solidarity with everyone who's like a naturally, you know, a born human, like someone who's not a walk-in. Like, it's really rough to be here. And I didn't say, let me sit on an interdimensional cloud and I will just like look down on the poor humans and say, oh, like, it's everything is so bad there, and like, I'll eat a beautiful strawberry. Like, no, I said, like, things are really crappy down there, and I have solutions. I'm going to actually come as a first-person participant. Like, that's a pretty important distinction to make. Like, anyone who's here as a first-person participant, you're pretty badass, you know, like, to be here, to be actually embodied. And it takes a lot of personal willpower and strength to be able to do that. And it's hugely important for what we're experiencing, like what you mentioned briefly at the beginning, James, that people are experiencing life, reality being extremely malleable and fluid, and that this is part of this genetic and energetic magnetosphere transformation that we're experiencing. Like, we're here. We got the front row seat. It's very important to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like there's so many layers, like everybody's core essence, you know, they're, you know, on a soul level, we're all connected. You know, there are no colors. There's no, you know, it doesn't matter if you're black, green, purple, or yellow, or red, or whatever, you know. And, but we have all these layers, you know, on top of us. And we have, you know, the religious programming, the cultural programming, the trauma, the wounds, even the past life stuff, just all these layers. And I see so many people are operating from their layers, you know, they're not operating from their core and where everything's unified and everything's connected. And they're just acting out all these layers. And you go, my God, you know, like, when are you going to drop this program and get back to your core, you know, where everybody can kind of hang out, you know, and be kind to each other.
Yeah, and I like how you say that these are like programs, because I'm not a transhumanist, and I sense from you that you're not pushing the transhumanism thing. So I'm always really clear about that when I use this language. But yeah, a lot of our thought structures are like software programs, and that we can be running these really outdated programs that are totally not part of the new operating system, which is OS Love. And I think some of those outdated programs, and I'm not saying this to be I'm sorry that I'm searching for the right word here. Insulting is the word.
Yeah.
Condescending or insulting. Because anybody on earth who has a faith and they're looking for something larger and they're looking for something divine, I totally respect that. But a lot of the religions that I see, I call them death cults, because what they really teach us is about the necessity and the inevitability of death. And from my personal experience, this body had a real metabolic death. And I was able to transcend that. And the I in that sentence is, you know, a galactic level abstraction. It's aurora, by creating this flying rainbow lasagna, new energetic dance step. So I'm all about telling everyone, like, no, death is not inevitable. We can instead go through this metamorphosis or transformation or state change, like from solid directly to gas or plasma without liquefaction. Like, we can go like dry ice goes directly from solid to gas. We don't have go through that intervening transition of death. So I'm really at odds. I'm not trying to take people away from their faith. I'm trying to say that I think in many ways the faiths on this planet were designed to lead humans astray and to make humans think that death has to be experienced in order to get to, quote unquote, the other side or to transcend. And I'm like, no. We don't have to drive off the road of consciousness in order to then drive back onto the road of consciousness. What we need to do is much more what you were describing, align with our true core self, like allowing all the baggage and the detritus and the not real aspects of self to fall away and refocusing entirely our attention on the true, I call it, you know, like the central core timeline of the bundle of possibilities that is the graphic representation of our life, that we focus away from the periphery and towards the core. It's like focusing a telescope until all of the beams of light are in alignment. And then we are literally living the timelines and events of reality that make it so that we abrogate the necessity of death. We don't have to experience the cessation of consciousness and the cessation of metabolic processes. We keep those all going while we transform on the fly.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've seen so many religions, and I'm not here to bash religions. They all have core teachings in there that are good, you know, but most of them teach an external God, and it's like a battery. You start leaking. You start looking outside yourself and blame or give credit to these entities for this and that, and it actually takes you off the mark. And almost all the religions, you know, have a bearded God in them. And that bearded God came from the Anunnaki, the ancient ones that were here a long time ago. And if people would do the research, they would find out that, you know, some of these beings that were here were very benevolent, and they really wanted humanity to evolve to its highest potential. And some were a little malevolent. You know, they were not so friendly, and they were jealous, wrathful, and had their programs going, each religion is based on how that being interacted with the people. And, you know, and so if we just do our research but it seems like all these thick books and programs, and you have to do this and that. If you don't do it just right, you're going to be judged. And, you know, all these things are actually, you know, they're I call antichrist consciousness, basically, is what I call it.
I agree.
You know, but yeah, it's sad. And I see people, you know, and they want you, if you, you know, they project their thing on you. You have to behave just like this, or you're not enlightened, or you're not a guru, or you're not a whatever. And, you know, they have their image, and you have to wear the robes and the sandals or the sari, you know, and the hat, you know, the towel on your head or whatever else. And I said, you know, you can just be yourself.
Completely.
And, yeah. You don't have to act like somebody else, you know, to become enlightened.
And you're also referring to the origins of a lot of these expectations of what is quote unquote enlightened behavior as going back to these, you know, whatever you want to call them, Anunnaki. Like I'm describing lumping everyone in as technology using space races, because there's all sorts of different, uh-huh, we could call them species or races of non-terrestrial life. And the main distinction that I'm making is some of them are so advanced that they do not need to use any form of technology. Like they literally use nothing more than pure consciousness, pure light, photons, you know, the energy of the stars, the energy of the sun, and they're completely natural and without artifice. And then there are the beings like what you described, the Anunnaki and others, other flavors. It's like 31 flavors of ice cream. These guys that run around up there, and they have ego. They are not purely divine beings that have worked through their personal issues. Like they've got issues. And then they've also, it's like children playing with firecrackers. So we'll take people who have a lot of issues and then we'll give them a lot of fancy toys, and then they can go around like messing things up. So that's what these non-terrestrial species have done. Like, I don't want anyone on Earth right now who's in a human body to be unduly impressed by these technology using space races that at first you might say like, wow, that's really impressive. You know, they can, you know, move a whole moon, or they can do this or that, or that they can change and transform other species on a genetic level, that those beings are responsible for the genetic degradation that we're experiencing right now. So don't be unduly impressed by them, because all of their energy comes from, let's call it like hacking the system. You know, like a hacker of a computer, that they didn't invent the system. They're not that smart. All that they did was they found the software vulnerabilities that allowed them to break in and repurpose the system. So the races like the Anunnaki used the original template of humanity and our genes, which were really divine and really perfect, and they hacked it. They changed it. They repurposed it. They degraded what we were into what we presently are. And what we are is good. Like, I want you to know, I have a little dog sitting right next to me who I love a lot. And dogs are wonderful. But they are not the wild, undomesticated wolf format they're the domesticated format. And so what we are right now in our present human form on Earth is the domesticated format, not the wild, undomesticated wolf, because wolves run around and they do not need to sleep in a dog bed and they do not need anti-flea medicine and they can eat whatever they want. They don't need to eat a can of dog food. And domesticated dogs, they behave for their human masters because they can't just live on their own. So we as humans were first genetically degraded by these, extraterrestrial overlords. They were like, you know, the beings that changed us from being wolves to being dogs. And then they said, now we're your masters. And you got to be a good dog and you got to sit. If you want food, if you want dog bed, you're going to have to do what we want you to do. And that's worship. And a lot of the worship that we have been taught to do in terms of formalized religion is not healthy. Like the idea of sacrifice, killing another organism to give it to a supposed, you know, bearded sky god to eat or consume in some way, like that's not divine. So what I teach about it, and I use a lot of visual diagrams and drawings, like I'm really primarily a visual artist, and I have these visions, you know, that come from my, I call it my inner telescope, from seeing with my higher faculties. And then I consider it my job to kind of translate those inner images that I experience into paintings or sculptures or animations or externalize it in some way so that I can bring that information to other people who might not have seen that. It's like if I go to visit a foreign country and I see a landscape and I'm like, okay, I'm going to remember what this looks like, I'm going to paint it with my little watercolor set, and then I'm going to be able to show that to everyone who's never visited here. So if anybody checks out my artwork, and I would love for you to check out my work, it's really, you could call it symmetrical, you could call it geometric, but I usually say it is a language of vibration and frequency, because it goes beyond just, sacred geometry. That's about describing the physical forms of Earth, like polygons and cellular structures and even things like a honeycomb or a sunflower's, natural formations. We're talking about time. We're talking about describing the larger overarching patterns of the larger metabolic being that we live within that's alive, that's called time. Like we are part of the metabolism of consciousness that flows around a being that's made out of time, and our little, seemingly inconsequential experiences of our life are actually hugely important, because we're like red blood cells, that if enough of us swim around in the right direction, the body stays alive. If we don't go and do the right thing, then we don't keep the larger body alive. So this assault on our bodies and our DNA, in ancient times, wasn't just about these little bodies. It wasn't just about this planet. It really affected the larger time field. And that's also to say that what we're experiencing right now in terms of our individual healing, our social healing, and our planetary healing, it's not just our personal stuff. That we are here on very important personal individual missions to do this healing with our own DNA, and it radiates outward and it radiates across time. So we're here in this little petri dish growing this antidote to a larger technological infestation that has harmed and affected the time field in many different solar systems across this galaxy, I think in multiple galaxies. So I gotta clarify, because a lot of people think, oh, it's just a little problem, a little infection that we have on this little planet, and it's because humans are so sinful and horrible. No, no, no. Humans did not deserve this, and it's not just on this planet. It is literally galactic, and that's why it's such a large challenge, but we have the wherewithal to face the challenge.
Yeah, I agree. That I've noticed here, that the sun is, and just the energy fields, the whole spectrum has changed. Everything has changed on the planet.
Yes.
And I kind of feel that all of that is a major activation, right down to the level of DNA.
Yeah.
And I've been working with, we have we're a multidimensional being. We have this blue body that has the perfect incarnation, the whole and healthy, perfect self. And if we can get that communication back into the DNA itself, into the cell, and reconnect that through meditation. There's a lot of different ways of doing it. You can even do it through diet in some cases. But you can reactivate, that DNA that's been turned off. And when these DNA lines start opening up, you start having the gift of telepathy, of clairvoyancy. You can see forward or backward in time. You can, you can activate your own salamander gene, which will heal you. There's so many things that get activated when you start doing this kind of work. And it sounds like you're doing something similar around helping people to activate their DNA and kind of recalibrate.
Completely, James. You got it. I'm smiling and nodding as you're talking. So the whole idea is, if we're saying, why are we in this position of having to bootstrap ourselves up from like the lowest levels of consciousness on the consciousness ladder? And the answer is because we got crashed down by genetic invaders. And my solution, like I'm never going to tell everyone about the horrible situation that we're in without bringing up the solutions, is a shape that I invented. And the shape itself is called a flying rainbow lasagna, which I know is a funny name, but when I named it that, you can tell I'm a cultural outsider. I didn't say like, how can I name this a weird name? Like, it's what it is. It's what it looks like to me. It's a type of higher dimensional torus or donut shape. So the way that I am explaining this, like it's hard because I usually draw pictures, but I'll paint a picture with my voice. If a torus or a toroid is like a donut, and that is what our non-physical energy field is ordinarily shaped like. And we are miniature versions of the planet that we're standing on. We're, you know, tiny fractal microcosms. The planet herself has a toroidal donut-shaped energy field around her that's called the magnetosphere. And it's a magnetic envelope, and it's part of what causes the phenomena known as the Aurora Borealis and Aurora Australis. It's where I get my name from. When you take that toroid shape, and you move it in a higher dimensional context, it turns into a flying rainbow lasagna. And so in math talk, if I were to say what cube is to tesseract, torus is to flying rainbow lasagna, that's kind of like saying if we take a flat two-dimensional piece of paper and we add another dimension to it, we make it three-dimensional. And that's like folding a flat piece of paper into an origami shape. And when you do that, you gain additional degrees of freedom. It means you can do more stuff than you could have done before. So if you take a flat piece of paper, you can't do that much stuff with it. But if you can fold it, all of a sudden you have an array of different shapes you can make out of it. That is what we can do with our DNA. We can envision that our present level of DNA, and you could think of it as a sweater, like the way that a sweater is knitted or crocheted out of one piece of yarn that's twined together. Well, our DNA is dynamic. It is not a static object that sits there doing nothing. Like, I don't know what everybody gets taught in science class, but I think a lot of people think that DNA just sits there. It doesn't do anything. No, it is just like a vibrating string of a guitar. Or I'm going to go over to my little, this is an electric piano. It's not a real piano, but it's just like, there you can be. Oh, you can hear it. This is a vibrating string. Like, we are filled with vibrating strings, and we make our own music on a genetic level. And the melodies that we've been playing up until this point have been the melodies that were programmed into us after this genetic degradation. And the melodies basically tell us, oh, like, this is how you grow old and grow decrepit as you move through time. And this is how you die. And none of those things were part of our original format of what we were supposed to do with bodies here in this time and place. Like when the original composer that wrote all of this music did not say, I'm going to write some music that says these are bodies that only last for 100 years. And as you move through time, you lose vitality and you get weaker and weaker and weaker until one day you fall over and die. That was not part of the original intended experience of being here. And we were not supposed to be separated from that great composer and all the great music that, you know, incepted all the symphony of life. So the idea of coming into physicality and being cut off from the music and the knowledge of what we're supposed to be doing here, that's antithetical to our purpose. And the idea of moving through time and becoming decrepit and dying is also completely not what we're supposed to be doing. That's old music. So here's a new melody that we can play. This melody is called the Flying Rainbow Lasagna. Mm-hmm. And in this melody, what we're able to do is re-knit the genetic sweater to take it from its original format and maybe pull out some of the threads and then start from a different direction and make it formatted in a new way so that we can write a new story. So a big emphasis that I always tell people about is the idea that your DNA is what connects you to time. So science describes DNA as being a blueprint that tells us what shape our physical protein structures are going to take. Like your nose will be shaped like this, your eyes will be shaped like this. And it does do that, but our DNA also describes our trajectory through time. So it's not just a description of the shape of your face, it's a description of the events of your life. And if you can rearrange your DNA, it means you can also rearrange the events of your life. So the first thing is understanding that, like, the expectation of the necessity of death is a mental program, it's a software program that creates a genetic behavior. And changing your thought structure or your software program causes a concomitant change in genetic behavior. So what I teach, first of all, I do Flying Rainbow Lasagna. I invented it. I spontaneously, you know, created it as a solution to my own challenges. However, I'm not the only person that ever gets to play this melody. It's like saying if Led Zeppelin wrote the song Stairway to Heaven, but you can cover that song and you can take that melody and you can sing it in your own way and make it your own. So what I do is I teach everyone the way that, you know, like if you're a good music or art teacher, you give your students tools. You say, hey, like, here's a guitar, here's a paintbrush, here's what it is, here's how I play it, here's what I do with it. But I want to encourage you to express your own truth and your own music. So what I do with Flying Rainbow Lasagna is it's a practice. I also have to tell everyone that it's a concept. You know, for like 5 years when I lived back in Woodstock, I was talking with my friend, I'm talking about this stuff. And finally I showed them an animation of it and they were like, Aurora, you've been talking about this for 5 years and I never understood that it's like an actual thing that you do. So yeah, I'm making it really clear. It's not just a concept, it's an actual thing that I do. It's a dance. Real dance. It's similar to a visualization like the Merkaba. If you perform the Merkaba, it's a meditation, it's a focused visualization, and it's also something that you do with both your physical and your non-physical bodies. So that's what Flying Rainbow Lasagna is. It is a focused oscillation of my genetic material in new and unexpected directions, and it also is about transforming time. And when I do this dance, I am not in my usual, you know, earthly ego state. I'm not like, oh, I got to do the laundry and I got to do this and that. Like when I'm doing the Flying Rainbow Lasagna dance, I am really in a higher dimensional mind state where I'm connected to all of these other life forms that are like from the microbial level to the macroscopic galactic level. And it's all part of a giant symphony of life where we are working together. So that's another big emphasis, is that it's not only about the individual journey. Just like if you're in a band, it's not just about your individual part that you play. Like, you got to make sure you sound good. You got to also make sure that you integrate with the rest of the band. So I'm really certain to make certain that, you know, the thought structures that I'm sending out, the reality structures that I'm creating, they have to integrate with everything else. You can't just be a selfish musician playing loudly and things that please you, but that might be drowning out something else. So that's another big aspect of this, that my, you know, I'm an extraterrestrial presence. I come here, but I don't come here in order to be a bad visitor. Like, there's plenty of visitors that come in clank metal spaceships that are not respectful. And that's a big part of this, that this great composer created kind of like energetic firewalls, where if you need a clank metal spaceship to get off the surface of your planet and go fly to visit someone somewhere else, like, you're not ready to make that visit because you're going to fly across space covered in microbes. You're going to, you know, make everything go out of tune, because it's like we're in a very finely tuned instrument. And then if you're not adept enough to know the impact of your actions, you just go around messing everything up. So that's why we're in the present state, because very uninformed, loud, artificially amplified musicians, quote unquote, have gone around in their clank metal spaceships, influencing places that they shouldn't influence. And influence is in air quotes, because what I really mean is horribly invading, to the point we would define it as like a type of rape. We would define it as non-consensual, you know, like integration here. So yeah, a big part of this battle that we are undergoing is like rectification of the unwelcome visitors that have come in, and then learning to be what I would say good galactic citizens. Like, how do we be respectful of other space cultures, other organisms, how to walk around not stepping on other beings' toes. And so my basic understanding of that is, like, you know, you start locally and then radiate outward. So you begin with the creatures that are in your immediate environment, and the microbes and the tiny microcrystalline creatures that are on Earth, and then integrate with all of that. And then, like, oh, now that I've learned how to be respectful to all life, including giant things too, now I'm ready to integrate with all of the life that is elsewhere also. So I know I tend to run on. I don't mean to be running, like, Press pause.
Yeah, this is like your show, basically. So it's kind of interesting. There's a couple of things that I wanted to mention. I find it really interesting. I was working with Dr. Emoto, the new one, not Emoto, but there's There's an I-modal, like with an I, and the E-modal with an E. Okay. And we were talking about DNA and how, you know, his all of his research is showing DNA can be formed in water. Yes. And just by transferring the field, you know, from DNA to another glass or whatever of water, you can actually create DNA in water. And now they're finding that you can actually transfer DNA through a laser. You can shoot a frog egg, a salamander egg, or a salamander egg into a frog egg with a laser, and that frog would become a salamander. Yeah. And, you know, you look at all these things and you're going, well, wait a second. How hard would that be to go into the womb and hit your little interdimensional pin, you know, a laser pin, and zip. And the next thing you know, you've totally upgraded humanity. And I think I'd like to get your perspective on it. There seems to be a mass effort in doing that, mostly now on the positive side, giving people upgrades, kind of opening up different lines and things. But I think in the past, there was just the opposite. You know, there was a degradation of DNA. But now it seems like the higher dimensional beings, the scientists and those guys are trying to repair things and bring things back up.
So I will agree with you that, well, first I'll say this. My understanding about like the creation of life, like the actual inception of humanity, is that it was a naturally occurring event, that it wasn't something that was done, let's say, through technological accoutrements, that it was more like a many, many voiced symphony, like a chorale where many people sang together and made life happen in the physical. And then the idea of zapping something in the womb, that is very real. And I call that dark magic or, you know, satanic mm-hmm. technology, that these are space races that have found a way to subvert the natural music. And so they might have whatever we'll call it, a magical ray gun that can, yes, that can influence the developing consciousnesses. Because, you know, humanity right now has been programmed with this idea of objective materialism that does not include the recognition of invisible frequencies. And in order to get into the next level, humanity has to understand there's invisible stuff that is called frequency and that's affecting consciousness. And this is a similar jump to like in the dark ages or before the invention of lenses that could create microscopes so we could see tiny microbes. No one knew about germ theory. No one knew where diseases came from because they couldn't see the little tiny bugs. And then when they invented lenses, then they could see the little tiny bugs and they could believe in them. So scientists right now don't believe in frequency and they don't believe in the capacity for something invisible to affect, you know, like developing tissue or a consciousness in the womb. So they are, the Earth's surface scientists are far away from being able to recognize that this is what's going on, and it puts humanity at a great disadvantage because humanity is being affected negatively by things like Wi-Fi, and yes, I do say fry, like Wi-Fi, 5G, all of that, and other forms of call it exotic technology, things that are frequency weapons that are being used in unconscious and harmful ways. But you brought up something that is more positive, which is the idea of healing. So I'll say this to anyone who thinks like, oh, you have to get inside of some kind of technological, they call it a med bed, whatever people are calling it. No, you don't have to get inside of a technological contraption in order to experience profound, what we would even define as miraculous healing, that it's really possible to do that with nothing more than our voices and frequency tools. I got I have a little sonic, you know, resonant instrument, things like gongs, tuning forks, all the things that have been used in literally in the ancient world for healing that are create subtle frequencies that we are really able to do all of the miraculous healings that we need to do with that. And we don't have to use technology in order to do this. So I'm always trying to get everyone away from this. It's almost an addiction on the reliance upon the idea of technology, but we don't actually have to have that.
Yeah, I agree. The thing about everything, if you know, again, when it goes back to frequency, you know, everything is basically frequency. You know, there's no such thing as mass. It's just condensed, you know, energy that came from consciousness, basically, or from light to consciousness, light to energy to mass. And when you understand that, I really think about, you know, they're proving now DNA is not physical, that DNA has an energy component to it. And you know, when you go back to consciousness, you know, you ask people, what is DNA? Well, DNA is a code. Well, who wrote the code? You know, and how do they bring that code into the physical? And the more you look at this, you go, wow, everything is just a thought, basically. Everything is somebody's dream, you know, everything. And so we're in somebody else's dream, and we don't have to be in somebody else's dream. We can start dreaming something different and changing our own DNA and changing our own outcome, and our own reality and everything else. And you know, but the scientists say, you know, if you don't have physical evidence, it's not real. But they know there's at least 11 dimensions out there, and there's more life on the other dimensions than this one. The fourth dimension is massive compared to this one. And so by their own standards, you know, it's illogical to do what they're doing, demand physical proof of non-physical events, which they know by their own science are real. And so on that level, they're real, may not be real on this level. So, you know, I see this all the time. I see these smug scientists, you know, come up and they come at you with these things. And I just say, well, that's, you know, that's totally illogical. You're not even using physics or science here. You're using, I would say, scientism, or you're using a very limited form of thought or consciousness, you know, to try to keep everything in the physical to be real.
And what you were saying a moment ago about you perceived we were in somebody else's dream, or in a dream that is not within our control, and now it's time for us to be within the controllers of the dream. I'm completely agreeing with that. That there's this idea also in human earth religion that there's you're not supposed to be the author of your own script, that it's supposed to be a fate outside of you, like a god or something else, a fate, a destiny that writes your script, and then you're just the actor walking through it. And I keep on trying to encourage everyone, no, if you, like, your body is your own. Like, we don't own the house that you're in. You don't own any molecules other than your own body, but you do own your own body, and you own the DNA structure within your body that literally, like, in terms of like cosmic law or ethics, you are ethically allowed to affect your own structure and play your own music. That means you're not beholden to expectations of your ancestors, like your mommy or your daddy or any of your ancient ancestors, or present human society, like what government wants you to do, or even earth religion. So you're each one of us. I don't have to give you permission. I'm reminding each one of us that we are each free to write our own script, and that means you get to throw out the window, toss out all of the expectations that are not desirable expectations. Like if someone says, well, cancer runs in your family, therefore that's going to happen to you. You can toss that expectation out the window, along with any of the other genetically, you know, passed on diseases, along with any other trait that might not be a desirable trait that you might want to change. Along with, how about this, trauma, like ancestral trauma, that a lot of times it is presented like, if you don't remember and carry in your heart the, you know, pain and trauma of our tribe, then you are like disrespectful to your ancestors. And I'm trying to tell everyone, no, in this generation, we get to make a choice to be free, where we recognize that those traumas happened and we heal them and don't pass them on to the next generation, so that everyone actually has like a clean slate to start from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did a lot of ceremonies here. Like, we have a lot of elders from just about everywhere come here, and we've done a lot of sweat lodges, and there were some Lakota elders here, and I actually got them to change the lodge, which was unheard of. But I told, you know, the first round when they welcomed their ancestors, I was sitting there sweating, and there's a couple chiefs and some other guys that were all hanging out, and all of a sudden this guy shows up, and he's black. I mean, he's burned, black, red eyes, pissed off, angry. And here's the white guy that kind of looks like Custer sitting with the elders, you know. And guess who he goes for? You know, me. And just starts energetically pounding on me. And I had to crawl out of there basically almost. I just said, whoa, this is like. And so I went to the chief and I said, when you welcome your ancestors, I said, they're not all happy campers. Yeah. You know, and there's been a lot of trauma and a lot of things have happened. And apparently you have some ancestors that were burned alive, that were killed and were burned alive, and they're stuck. They didn't go anywhere and they're just hanging out. Yeah. And don't you, I said, what do you think about the first round? Why don't you welcome the ascended ones, like, you know, Rolling Thunder, White Eagle, Buffalo Calf Woman, you know, the ones we know are ascended. And bring them in, and then welcome any ancestors that need healing or need clearing. and then go to the next round, you know, the prayer for others or whatever. And they said, you know, we'll think about it. I said, you know, it's not my place to say this. You know, I said, my great grandmother was Cherokee, but I said, it's not my place. And I said, I'm just making a suggestion, but I said, I got my butt kicked in there. And I wasn't ready for that. You know, I wasn't expecting that. And so I said, next round, I'm always going to bring in, you know, the ascended ones, the higher ones. And so they changed the lodge. And the next lodge we did was amazing. We had lights inside, dancing lights, and people were having spontaneous healings. It was just an amazing lodge. And just by doing that one little thing, like, you know, and we have a saying here, just because you're dead doesn't mean you're enlightened, and just because you're knee-deep doesn't mean you're benevolent, you know. Yeah. So you got to use discernment, you know, when you're playing these games.
Thank you so much for making that distinction, because that's a huge one. The qualitative difference between beings who are no longer embodied. Some musicians graduate, right, and they move on to like the great gig in the sky, and some musicians smash their guitar on stage and then they're just kind of waiting in the wings and they don't have a guitar anymore and they're trying to always get your guitar. Like I joke, I call them turds who refuse to flush. You use much kinder language, saying that they require healing. That's good, like healing, they need healing.
Yeah.
They're like emotional residues that have not been digested, and they're like fatty blockages in the arteries of the heart of a great being. So we, uh-huh. And you know, I want to make the distinction also, like those fatty blockages, we carry them within us as ancestral traumas, and we can heal them in this body. We can help the larger body, and we can say, I heal those traumas. I don't carry them within me. I allow that energy consciousness, you know, to flow effectively. And the more of us that do that, the more that there's healing on levels across time. It's like all of a sudden these blockades get removed and everybody gets healed.
Yeah, they're in your fields. And that's what one of the things we do here. We clear people's fields, and we go through, you know, childhood trauma. We go through past life trauma, and we go through everything, and then we reconnect people with their star nation connections and things like that, you know, the beneficial lives. But it's not that hard to move out once you're hooked up. I call it, you know, hooked up into the 220 energy. Things move very quickly and gracefully, and they're just energies in your fields, and you can clean your fields and not have to deal with them. But I know there's so much dogma around about, I have to take on the pain of the ancestors, and I have to do that. You know, I have to suffer to become enlightened, you know, and dying on the cross program, we got to let go of that whole program, because, you know, they say Jesus died for our sins, but I mean, there was sin before he died and there was sin after he died, and I can't figure that one out. But
I'm really agreeing with you that I do not sense that there's a necessity to suffering or that it has a didactic purpose. In fact, when I'm trying to learn something new, like if I want to learn a new song on the piano, suffering does not help me. What helps me is sitting comfortably and being, you know, like, it doesn't help me if someone is beating me or on my head or pouring ice water on me. Like, no, I think that that's a huge, it's like the death cult programming that says, oh yeah, we're supposed to be here to suffer, to learn. No, I do think that we're here in a cosmic school, but that it's not supposed to be based on suffering, and that we can change this to be not a suffering paradigm anymore. And I just wanted to say, I also really love and respect the distinction that you made between different forms of star species or star entities, that just because a being is non-terrestrial does not make it benevolent. And that's like that presumption, that naivete of humanity has been preyed upon for so long. And there's also some genetic manipulation that we have this preconceived presumption that if we hear a voice in our head, oh, it's God, oh, it's something benevolent, oh, I should listen to this thing. So I've had to go through all of those programs in this body, because I came into this body, I have to go through all the earth programs. I'm like, oh, that ain't real, and get through the idea that these things are presenting themselves as higher and better, but they are really lower and malevolent.
Yeah, I agree. I found that interesting. Some of the, you know, these I won't mention any names, but there's some very high people in the field of ufology. They're like the main people, and they're saying it's all good, it's all love, and stop being spiritual snobs. You need to let anything that wants to come through into your body.
Oh God!
And now they're saying the opposite. They borrowed my have a oh, it's kind of an outline of the different dimensions and who's who and where they are on the dimensions. And I talk about the low fourth dimension and the greys and reptilians and serpent beings and all the other stuff in there. I've been saying this for years and arguing with everybody and saying it's all benevolent. Now he's using my stuff and put out a new video. But, you know, his book, his life story was exactly my life story too. So I guess copying is great, but, you know, it's so funny watching these people and they just want to be on the podium. They want to have the latest and best stuff and information, and they're not doing their own homework. But I see some of these people standing, and they got these two big old kind of reptilian gray hybrids standing right behind them, you know, and people don't see that. And I go, you don't see what's going on there. You can't feel that energy that's going on, and they just don't get it. And I think that's the sad thing about it. There is a lot of people preying on people because they are ignorant and they want to worship some external force, and they want to gain the power that force they think will give them. But everything within, and if you're seeking, you're leaking, you know, it's like you're a battery and you're leaking, and people are seeking so much out. They're seeking everything, you know, love, acceptance, approval, everything outside of themselves. And they're like these batteries that are just being drained like crazy. And they're doing everything other than going within and becoming what they seek or finding what they seek within.
I'm agreeing with you wholeheartedly, and I'm somewhat dismayed by what I've perceived in what we would call like the UFO community. So because when I first got here, I was kind of excited. It's kind of like, imagine if whatever, if you visited China and you came someplace and they're like, yeah, we've got like a We Love China club. And I'm like, oh, cool. They would be really interested in all of my stuff that I know about China. And then I went there and it was like, no, they're like talking about Panda Express. Like they're not really talking about China. So I'm trying to say, like, I think that a lot of what you mentioned with people that present themselves at UFO conferences, but they've got a big giant reptilian influence standing behind them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ego motivation. Many people who are either motivated through personal aggrandizement or victimhood, and the victimhood often is a desire for healing. Like people will say, like, I've been abducted, these horrible things happened to me, and you know, it's like they're in pain and they're crying out and they want to be recognized and healed. I recognize all of that, and I don't want people to think that I am, you know, condescending or whatever. But I have to say, I've been extremely frustrated at being here on Earth for 17 years with lots of information to share. Where I'm like, hey guys, like I've got math and I've got, you know, practicable things that you can do. And people were instead more interested in listening to, you know, flights of fancy, like, oh, like I think I flew to Mars, or I think I got abducted. And like, I understand that those stories have their value, but it's like, I got information to share with you. So yes, perhaps my ego was agitated by watching those things. You know, I'm sorry, I'm just babbling here.
Yeah.
It seems to me like
what I've seen over and over again is you're trying to give people the whole enchilada or the whole pie, and they have a little piece of the pie and they go, this is my pie. I have my group and my group is centered around this pie.
Yeah.
And they go, how dare you threaten my pie? You know, how dare you threaten my piece of the pie? You know, how dare you take part of my piece of the pie? And it's some kind of weird lack control program going on there. But it's replete around the field of ufology, unfortunately. And, you know, and you have, and what I've seen over and over again, you have these people and they just want to focus on nuts and bolts or keep it in the past or keep it all fearful. And as you get out of that, they just freak out. And you know, I'll go there one time and do a lecture. I won't hear from them for 5 years. And yeah. The audience will love it. You know, I'll get a standing ovation, the biggest run on the DVDs they've ever seen. I never get asked back again. And it takes them about 5 years to recover.
I think there's a couple of other things going on. Intelligence agencies and who is really running the conferences. Because
exactly.
I think our intelligence agencies are themselves infiltrated by and controlled by malevolent ETs. And then they control who can get together a conference, who is invited to speak, who gets paid, who gets these workshops. So I was really super naive. I didn't understand in coming here to Earth How do you get on a stage on any level, art, music, or, you know, being a public speaker? And I thought, oh, very naively, like, you know, it's just merit-based that the person with the most information gets to be, or the best musician gets to get on the stage. Then I had to learn, like, no, people get manufactured into stars. And it's the same thing in the UFO community. Some people are allowed to have a platform to speak because what they say agrees with the agenda of the controllers. And if you do not agree with that agenda, then you will not be given a platform to speak. And if you give people tools for their own empowerment, I predict you'll be suppressed by the controllers. Like, we don't want you to get your information out there. So yeah, but you know, I'm always big like on like having a rock and roll attitude, like, we'll do it anyway. So Flying Rainbow is on you anyway. Do your practices anyway.
Because the
malevolent beings and intelligence agencies cannot stop you from contacting actual, real, benevolent extraterrestrials. Like, it really is a journey of the heart. It really is. Like, I tell people, talk directly to the sun. Like, don't try to talk to anybody that flies in a metal spaceship. Talk directly to the stellar network. And I'm also a big advocate for, like, sun gazing. Because, you know, I don't tell people to stare directly with their physical eyes, but to tune in with your inner eye directly to the sun and the stars with no intermediaries and get that. It's like plugging into pure consciousness. And then there's no need for systems of interpretation or benevolent extraterrestrials or anything other than yourself and that pure consciousness.
Yeah, you know, people go, what would you do if a UFO landed, you know, and these beings walked out? And, you know, I'd say, hey, what's up? You know, I'd high five them and I'd tune into them and see what their agenda was. And if they were benevolent, you know, I'd go hang out with them.
Yeah.
If I felt they had some other agenda going, I'd say, hey, well, have a good one, you know, and move them on.
Yeah.
But and that's what people need to do. We need to stop, as we were talking about before, a lot of them won't come here. Because they know we're gonna go into worship mode, or we're gonna fear them and we're gonna attack them, or the religions are gonna demonize them, and they're aware of that. And they say, "Why come? You know, why come until you rise to the occasion, until you're ready to greet us equally, and you're open to learning? You know that things may not be what you think they are, and you may have been misled concerning your history and your divinity and who you really are and where you really came from, And I see that, you know, and doing that here now, I know exactly what they're talking about. It's like, you know, we'll be back in a couple thousand years, you know.
I think it's going to have to be a couple of thousand. I think the prep work has been done. Like, the garden has been prepared for the seeds to be planted. I think that humanity is much less likely to fall on their knees and worship an alien space Jesus that comes out of a clank, clank metal spaceship that would have been like, let's say, even 10 years ago. Like, I think people are way more tuned into their own divinity and much less like kindergartners ready to, you know, like believe in anything. And that's a big thing. Like, the higher races sometimes look at Earth humans as little kindergartners who don't know anything and they're ready to condescend to you. So I want everyone to understand, like, no, like, everyone here is the potential to be divine beings. Like, that's what really happened. We went from being divine beings in the, you know, antediluvian sophisticated world before the quote unquote the fall, to now being diminished and domesticated. And all the other beings are like, ha ha, we're laughing at you because you're little and you still have to eat and poop and buy toilet paper.
Yeah,
we do. But we're on that cusp of personal empowerment when, like, no, we're actually not going to be condescended to anymore. And anybody who, you know, bullied us on the playground, then they get their comeuppance when we actually become empowered. So be aware of that, too. They're very concerned about blowback from all of their thousands of years of oppression. Humans.
Yeah. Well, they say the most powerful ship you're ever going to find is your own body, you know,
and
we can jump dimensions, you know, with our own bodies, and we can, we have the source itself within us, you know, the one consciousness that encompasses all consciousness and all planes and dimensions. So,
yes.
I mean, what more power can you have than that? But we've just been misled and fooled and degraded and, you know, it's, to believe that we're these wretched little sinners crawling on the ground, you know, that we're not divine beings. I love the old saying, they said the bravest of angels are the ones who came to Earth and not the dregs of society. But, you know, we have been under this draconian law for quite some time. And it's a very tyrannical, suppressive program, you know, back since Marduk. But that's all being cleared up right now. And that whole program's folding in on itself. And I think when this whole new system comes in and the new grid, you know, gets firmly in place, it's going to be, you know, like you said, come up in times.
Definitely. And, you know, I want to tangential, but something you mentioned before about pole shift, the idea that, you know, we went through this pole shift in whatever, 10 or 20,000 years ago, that really did cause cataclysms and transformations on our planet. And a lot of people are afraid of the ongoing impending pole shift. And I keep trying to tell everyone, I don't think that it's going to be like north, south to south, north, like what it was. I think it's going to be inside to outside, outside to inside, meaning our internal reality of dreams and imagination becomes externalized, and our external reality of hard-edged materialism becomes internalized, so that our world becomes more malleable and more fluid and more flexible. And so it's ongoing. I'm reading tons of anecdotal stories of people that are already experiencing this. Mm-hmm. It can be something as simple as coffee magically appears in the cupboard that wasn't there before, or, you know, other reality anomalies, or something much more major like spontaneous healings that are occurring.
Yeah, exactly. That works for me. We've hit the end of the hour. It was awesome having this conversation. I know people are going to love this show. And I wanted to end mainly by just thanking you for coming on the show, and thank you for coming to this planet, basically. I know what a journey that was. But what is the best way for people to get in contact with you to experience some of your artwork and the information that you have to share?
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on the show. And the best way to find me is going to my website, which is flyingrainbowlasagna.com. And I spell lasagna with an E on the end. And from there, you can find all of the links to, like, my Facebook, my Twitter. I'm on YouTube, where I have an extensive list of webinars that are free and open to the public. And also, you can find their links to my more formal teachings on Teachable. It's called Lessons from Full Spectrum Humans. So basically, if you go to my website, you will find links to everything. And also, I do sculptures, I do earrings, I do affordable artworks. Like, it's worth delving into everything that's available there.
Awesome. Well, again, thanks for coming on the show. We're out of time, unfortunately. So this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio signing off. You know, keep an open mind, a loving heart, and pure intent. That's all you need to get through these times. And expect a miracle, because they're coming. Anyway, have a great evening. Good night.